KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right, like peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, writer Kyle Killen's wild ride. He got a TV show on the fall schedule, and his script got made into a movie. Now his show's been canceled, and the movie, well, it stars Mel Gibson, and it's in limbo. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined by my banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So today we are approaching the anniversary of Rich Ross, the head of the Disney film studio, 1 year on the job. And what do we have to show for it?
Well, we have a lot of movies that he inherited from Dick Cook and Oren Aviv, who were the predecessor.
No, John, he inherited the failures, and he was responsible for shaping and marketing the successes, right?
You missed your true calling, Kim. You should be in Hollywood public relations. Obviously, one of the movies that has done the best under Ross, Alice in Wonderland, was a movie that Dick Cook and Oren Aviv made, and they also made Sorcerer's Apprentice, Prince of Persia, and those movies didn't do well, although I think a lot of people blame the marketing. But we are now at a one-year mark, and even though he did not make Secretariat, Rich Ross is embracing Secretariat, which opens Friday, as the kind of movie he wants Disney to be making.
Secretariat, obviously about the racehorse of that name, and with Diane Lane as the owner who believes in the horse. And Disney is clearly trying to position this as this year's Blind Side, an Oscar contender. I haven't seen it. I think you have, John. But from what I'm hearing, it's not going there, is it?
I'm not sure it's an Oscar contender. And I also don't think it's the kind of movie that's going to get 4-star reviews. But Disney is hoping this is a word-of-mouth, heartland film that, you know, average American moviegoers, families will go see. It has a Christian message. There's a gospel song in it. There's Bible verses. It's about a family that kind of rallies together. It leaves out of the film the fact that the owner of Secretariat divorces her husband soon after the Triple Crown win. But it is a very
those family values things can be tricky, huh?
It's an inspirational sports movie. And this is one of the genres that Disney is going to be focusing on. They want to make those kinds of movies like Secretariat, Blindside, Remember the Titans. They want to make they want to make comedies with heart, movies like Big and Splash and Enchanted. And then they want to make movies like Tron that create worlds. And they cite Alice in Wonderland and the upcoming Pirates of the Caribbean as their example. So in some ways, the Disney under Ross looks a lot like the Disney under Dick Cook.
Well, a lot different, too, because, you know, they're making far fewer movies than old Disney. And, of course, the personnel has completely changed. And I will say I'm picking up a lot of skepticism. I feel like Hollywood is starting to feel that this reinvention of the movie business that they want to preside over, they're kind of, I think the industry is sort of hoping, as they always do, that this will not work. And that, you know, you can't just say, yes, we're going to pick the really commercial movies and those will be really good, you know, because obviously if there was a way of doing that, would do it.
Yes, we'll just not make the money losers. That's a great business strategy.
It is. It's a great model. We'll see how they do with that going forward. Meanwhile, Oprah Winfrey last week gave an interview to Fortune in which she talked about the angst that has gone into launching her Oprah Winfrey Network and the amazing amounts of money that has been spent and as she acknowledges, kind of wasted.
Wasted because she couldn't make a decision, right? Because every show had to be approved by her, and she got stuck, and
she got
couldn't
paralyzed.
Sign off on things. I think the story says that it cost almost, $89 million of wasted money.
Yes, she said it was an extra $89 million on top of $100 million in launch money. And you know, we've heard in Hollywood around town that, you know, people are falling overboard like crazy, and it's been this kind of unmanageable proposition. And I wouldn't suggest that launching a network is simple, but boy, this one seems to have gone through some terrible, expensive angst going in.
No, it also sounds like she's become kind of hostage to her own success, and she doesn't want to go out on a bad note. So, again, there are Hollywood actors who have the same way. You hear Tom Cruise is making, you know, 15 different movies, and will he sign off on the script? Will he approve it? And I think Oprah in some ways became so powerful and so successful that she was, if the story is to be trusted, and it's a good story, was kind of paralyzed by her own success.
So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. It's supposed to launch in January of next year. Meanwhile, Oprah in 2011 and then in 2012, the 3D version of Star Wars. John, what do you think?
No.
That was the short answer.
If Jar Jar Binks was bad in 2D, how much worse will he be in 3D? I think this is a terrible idea. And it feels like one of those things where it's done only for the money. If these movies were intended to be in 3D, they would have been shot in 3D. Obviously, the technology didn't exist then. I've seen some of these 3D conversions. They don't look very good. I'm sure George Lucas will do a great job as far as the technology allows him to go. But I just think this is something that is crying out not to be done.
But I still think, even though I agree with you, I think George Lucas has been milking this one cow for a heck of a long time. The last, three movies are pretty much unwatchable. But people go. It's transcended its badness. It's become a cultural touchstone. I think people who have kids who never went to Star Wars will go. They'll go. I mean, I have never seen anything like the devotion that the fans have to this, even as they acknowledge, many of them, that Lucas has just flogged this thing to death. But, you know, he will sell merchandise and he wants to sell DVDs. This is about 3D TV, partly, which will be coming on much more online in 2012. You know, you can't bet against this guy, no matter how bad you think the product is.
I would tend to agree, and I'm sure there are people who are going to watch these movies again, and they'll watch them in 1D. I mean, they'd watch them silently. They're devoted fans, and I suspect they will all show up. And they'll have a movie every year starting in 2012 for the next 6 years. So that's a lot of Star Wars 3D.
Assuming that it works, and it's quite expensive, so if it doesn't, perhaps they will pull the plug on the whole experiment.
From your lips to a 3D God's ears.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Some writers work for years in the industry and never have anything produced, ever. But not Kyle Killen. He got a TV show picked up by a major network, and the critics loved it. And his screenplay was number one on The Blacklist, an annual Hollywood Insiders compilation of the best scripts out there. Killen sold that screenplay with Jodie Foster on board to direct and star. So with a TV show and a movie in the works, it sounds like Killen hit the jackpot, right? And Killen wasn't what you'd call an overnight success, either. He went to USC Film School, then he did internships and worked as a development person for years before getting burned out on L.A.
And I left to stop writing, and I actually decided I just wanted to be a normal human being and get a regular job.
Killen worked in various very non-Hollywood jobs, including tech support and construction. But he kept writing, often about his experiences at work.
And then I wrote a Salon.com article about my experiences as a tech support person for a company that outsourced for a major computer manufacturer. And I don't know, that article in a weird way kind of became a calling card, and it sort of sucked me back into writing. And I did short stories, and I won an award and kept doing that for a while. And then at some point started turning my own short stories back into screenplays. And eventually that's kind of how The Beaver came about. And that really sort of sent me off to the races.
Yes, The Beaver. And that's where things start to go a little wrong. Sure, the script brought Killen back to Hollywood and helped revive his writing career. But Jodie Foster's dark comedy also stars Mel Gibson as a troubled guy who communicates through a hand puppet. And now the movie is sitting in limbo at Summit Entertainment, the studio behind the Twilight films, as executives there try to decide whether audiences are ready to see Mel Gibson play a damaged character. But Killen wasn't relying solely on The Beaver because he also had a TV show, one of Fox's favorites for its fall schedule. Set in Texas, Lone Star told the tale of a con man caught between two or maybe three worlds, and the critics liked it. The New York Times called it an amusing and novel television conceit.
You're a con man, son. This is what you do. that what if I took the job for real?
For real? What do you know about real? She's not your real wife. She's the mark. She is our way into a multi-million-dollar corporation so we can clean it out.
2 weeks ago, Fox premiered Lone Star on a Monday night opposite some tough competition. ABC's Dancing with the Stars, CBS's Two and a Half Men, and the premiere of the new NBC action mystery, The Event. Still, Lone Star was placed in a pretty sweet spot, following the hit show House. And hope was alive. That is, until the next day when the ratings came in. When do you get the news that it's not going well?
Well, I was sort of new to television, so even when I had the news, I don't think I understood it. Like, you know, I saw the number and was like, that's a very large number. Like 4 million people. I don't know 4 million people. So this is, we've clearly gone beyond, like, you know, my family, which is more than I anticipated. So that seemed like a good number. But everything is relative. So four for us compared to, like, the 20 for Dancing with the Stars, you suddenly start to get the picture that maybe four is not what you're going to need.
You said you had to be explained to you that this was not a good number. How does that happen? They call you up and say, and you say, how about that number? And they go, yeah. I mean, how do you figure that out?
We very quickly had conversations with various people at the studio and network where they were like, yeah, no, this is bad. This is really bad. This is a large problem. And it was a large problem because it felt like we just completely missed the audience. You know, I think the pilot itself, it's got a little bit of a different feel than some of the other shows that it might be up against. But it felt like no one even sampled it. You know, we just hadn't brought people through the door. It would be one thing if we'd had a big number the first week and it turns out that the premise of the show or the characters, the writing or something about it really just turned people off and we couldn't bring them back. I think the issue here was that we didn't even get them in the front door the first time to check it out. And that felt like a bigger hurdle to overcome.
After that first airing, creator Kyle Killen decided to mount a one-man PR campaign in a desperate attempt to save Lone Star. He wrote a blog post on his website, optimistically titled, "You're invited to our stunning upset," and he urged the internet masses to join with him in this Hail Mary effort to save Lone Star from cancellation by watching the second episode. Killen's blog post got a lot of buzz. And then the Daily Beast asked him to write a piece about the making of Lone Star. Instead, he decided to interview himself about the show, asking himself questions like, what are you doing with the TV show anyway? Aren't you some moron from Austin? Here he is reading an excerpt from that mock interview.
Well, it turns out finding an audience in television is a lot like trying to get Jennifer Aniston to fall in love with you. At first, it seems totally impossible. But then you think, I don't know, she seems sort of down to earth, approachable, and suddenly you find yourself thinking, I bet if she really knew me, I mean, the real me, if I could just get her to spend 1 hour where she would see how clever and deep and full of emotionally revealing plot twists I am, she would totally be down for a date every week and possibly some reruns in the summer. But 1 week after asking America to fall in love with Lone Star, America is still seeing John Mayer. but I have, however, received a number of letters from Serbs who seem to have taken to us.
Just on the slide, I assume there are no Serbs who have seen this show yet.
Oh, I really, that's not comedy. That's real. I've really gotten several comments on the blog that are like, I am in Serbia and I know I cannot help you, but I really love the show.
When we interviewed Killen, he was shooting the 7th episode of Lone Star, and he was trying anything he could think of to get enough viewers to watch the 2nd episode, airing later that day. His hope was that the numbers would improve a little, enough to give Fox some hope that the show could grow an audience.
I think in our particular case, the numbers were so far below what was anticipated that you literally get into a financial situation where advertisers have paid for a certain number of eyeballs, and if you can't deliver those eyeballs, then you end up having to give back commercial time. So
right,
it's
make
less
good,
of
it's called, right?
That's right. That's mm-hmm. exactly right. So it's less of a situation where it's like, do we or don't we believe in this show? It's how much can we afford to believe in this show? And I think for them to press on, what we've got to find for them is a silver lining to cling to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what my week – it feels like I've been running a presidential campaign for a week. It feels like I've been running a write-in presidential campaign for a week. But that's what that's about, I think, is I think they want to and will stand by us. But we've got to show them that there is something on the other side. And I think that's what we need to demonstrate this week.
Yeah, I keep thinking about, you know, if I were in your shoes, I think I'd be going, well, why didn't, you know, they gave Seinfeld a chance and it caught on. And why can't they just move my shows? Why can't they stick with my show? And I don't know if you've had those conversations.
Oh, I've had every kind of conversation. I mean, why can't we just do it in people's, you know, living rooms as performance art? I mean, anything seems like an option when you're desperate enough. I mean, I guess if I had to jump to the other side from their point of view, you have one show that is kind of in trouble. You got to be hesitant, I think, to move anything else into that slot. You potentially take one problem and turn it into two.
Right.
So unless you've got something that's doing worse than us, it's really hard to throw something else to the wolves and then give us that time slot. But
right.
You're right. You know, the days when Cheers was a disaster its first season, Seinfeld, but that environment just has kind of, it's kind of disappeared. You got to come screaming out of the gate and you got to figure it out really, really quick. I mean, I've told people that it's, you know, I'm brand new to television in general, and it feels like you're learning to juggle with live grenades. It's fun and entertaining, but you cannot afford to drop a single one because then it's all over.
When the ratings came in for Lone Star's second episode, they were really bad, even worse than the ratings for the show's premiere. Fox pulled the plug, and Lone Star became the first casualty of the fall season. So Lone Star, after showing such promise, died a brutal death. But it wasn't the only arrow in writer Kyle Killen's quiver. Remember, he had written a red-hot script called The Beaver, and that script got made into a feature film with a budget of about $30 million. Directed by Jodie Foster, it starred Mel Gibson. The Beaver was originally going to be released in November or perhaps early next year, but now Gibson has some public relations problems, along with some other problems, and the movie is in limbo. This was certainly not the anticipated outcome for a movie based on a screenplay that was number one on The Blacklist, that annual list of the hottest unsold scripts in Hollywood. But just getting on that list changed Killen's life.
I mean, you absolutely go from begging and borrowing to get a look at stuff and to, you know, to meet with people and to talk about your ideas to, you know, the phone calls come the other way. And it's been, I mean, that was a radical, I mean, the story with the beaver was, it was a short story idea that I had, and I had always wanted to turn it into a novel, and I was sort of a writer in name only, and that it was sort of like when you would say that, people would say, well, what have you written? And you didn't have a follow-up, which always led me to believe that you're really, if you don't have a follow-up, you're actually like a typer, you're not
right.
Really a writer. So my wife got pregnant, and it turned out we were having twins.
Ooh.
And that was sort of the make or break moment. So I agreed that I was going to write that novel in those 9 months, and then, you know, it would work or it wouldn't. And if it didn't, you know, I would sort of give up the dream. And sort of halfway through the pregnancy, the novel was spinning into many hundreds of pages, but the story wasn't actually going forward. So I thought, that's not going to get done. So I remembered that screenplays are like 110 pages and there's a lot of white space. So I would just do one of those and I'd be done in like a week. And it was a lot longer process to sort of translate it back, but I ended up turning it in a week before we had the twins. And overnight almost isn't too much of a description. I mean, it went from not on the map, can't get a call, nobody's ever heard of you, to just the opposite of that. And so it really sort of a life preserver at just the right moment.
Coming up after a short break, more with Kyle Killen on selling a screenplay and then watching the star of the movie have a public meltdown. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Our guest today is Kyle Killen, the writer who got a TV show on Fox's fall schedule and wrote a hot script that got made into a film with some big stars. But this is Hollywood, and nothing has been simple for our guest. His show, Lone Star, drew abysmal ratings, and it was canceled after just two airings, the first casualty of the new fall TV season. And the movie, a dark comedy called The Beaver, stars Mel Gibson. And as a result of some PR troubles, it is now hanging in limbo with no release date. For a guy who's had some very golden things happen, you also had some ungolden things happen, because now this movie is made for in ballpark $30 million and kind of sitting there because it stars Mel Gibson. Now, I imagine that you stayed in touch with it. Steve Carell was originally going to be Mel Gibson?
Yes, we actually hired Steve Carell to play Mel Gibson, and he just felt like it wasn't a place he could go.
No. the main character in the movie is a guy who has this hand puppet and communicates through a hand puppet. I can see Steve Carell doing that, but what happened to Steve Carell? He just his attention turned elsewhere?
Well, he at the time was on the. I guess he's still on The Office.
Yes, he is.
And so when you're on a show like that, you get very limited hiatuses. And so we had him slotted in a couple times, but it's really, I think it must be very difficult to commit to doing, you know, a little indie movie when you only get to make a couple a year. And obviously, you know, he's sort of on top of the world at the moment, so he gets approached with. To do very, very big things for very large amounts of money. And
it was either Tina Fey or the hand puppet. Is that what you're telling me?
I think it was some of that. Yeah. So he ventured off and we moved on.
And of course, this is a Jodie Foster thing. And she's very good friends with Mel Gibson. But how involved were you once this thing got bought and got made?
I think I was fairly involved early on as we went into production. You know, Jody had a lot of thoughts about the script, and you know, we sort of worked through those. And then you know, I was on set a few times, but not certainly nothing like television, where you're there, you know, every day and at the monitor. It's a totally different world for a writer between features and television.
Sure.
And at this point, I am almost a casual observer.
Yeah. And so now it's like, here is this thing and your movie gets made and it's got a big star in it. And then the terrible, I mean, he was already, you know, there were already issues before these most recent round of issues with Mel Gibson, but now there are just gigantic issues. Do you have any idea? We're waiting to hear whether this movie is going to be released anytime soon.
Right. And I am waiting right along with you. I mean, I have no idea if, when, or how that would ever happen. You know, all I can say is having seen early cuts of the film, regardless of what you thought of, think of, or will ever think of Mel Gibson, and perhaps because of that, it's a pretty incredibly arresting performance. And, you know, I don't know that anyone will ever see it, but I think it's, I don't even know how to describe it. It's sort of fascinating in that you can't help but feel some of real life or some of what has surrounded the movie in the movie.
Well, it's a very dark, I'm not going to give away anything, but it's a pretty dark, dark story, right? The fact that all of this has happened, is it almost like too much tracking to real, you know, when you see a guy, think of Steve Carell playing that role, we don't think of Steve Carell as being a scary or tragic person, but Mel Gibson now, you know, is freighted with issues. Is it too much, too close to, you know, the feeling that a character going over the edge?
I guess it feels like there's an incredible amount of, you know, darkness in Mel's life that he's able to find and bring to that character.
He doesn't even have to look very hard, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you would have gotten some of the, you just wouldn't have felt some of the same things, regardless of how incredible, you know, let's say a Steve Carell's performance would have been. I think just because it doesn't reverberate with real life, there would have been a color or a shade that you wouldn't have seen that you get with Mel.
I think people are going. You know, there's going to be a group of people out there who are just purely curious to see this film. You know, whether the big public ever would have watched a film like this.
it's very different. It's very weird. It's a little dark. But it actually, I always found it very accessible and in a weird way mainstream, in that I felt like it deals with issues we're all sort of familiar with. The idea that, you know, we reach a place where things aren't the way we want them to be, and we look for these really quick fixes. We want it to be in a book or a TV show or a seminar. Like, we just want a quick answer that isn't about a lot of work or, you know, therapy or what, you know.
How did you come up with the hand puppet?
Well, I mean, of all the absurd quick answers, that seemed like
absurd
a very
quick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's essentially a way to replace yourself. You know, you stop being you and you start becoming another character. You just throw out who you are and start over.
Yes. So that's how it's, I mean, I have to say it did sell overseas, right? It was a big seller at the AFM American Film Market last year, and has some, I assume, audiences overseas will get to see it, or do we know?
I don't know. I really don't know what the release pattern would be or what their commitments are.
It's very weird because, you know, you have these two things which are like, yay, and then both of them, for different reasons, have these big issues. You know, it's such a reversal of fortune with, I mean, was there a moment when you saw Mel Gibson in the news and thought, oh my God?
I don't know. I think I'm still in yay mode. I mean, you know, 4 years ago, I was doing construction and crawling around in ceilings above laundromats. So for me to sit here and say, oh, it's kind of a bummer that my Mel Gibson movie didn't work out like I thought it would. There's something incredibly disingenuous about that.
Does it feel like a luxury problem?
It absolutely does. Whatever happens tomorrow, I couldn't be happier with where I'm sitting today.
Well, I have to say that in both of these cases, if Lone Star doesn't go forward, if the Beaver, you know, and whatever happens, you have two great calling cards. And I think in both cases, it's not hard to explain, you know, like you get a pass almost on the Beaver because if people don't like it, because they'll be like, yeah, but it didn't have a chance. Right. And with Lone Star, you have the great reviews. So you come out of it. It's not optimal, but it's not tragic and disastrous from a career point of view.
I don't know. You sound like my agent. Are you available for like PR? I like this, the way you're saying.
Well, I'm trying to look. It's very out of character for me, but I'm going cup half full here.
Good. I love it.
I do feel like if somebody wrote your story about what has happened with this stuff, people would find it a little over the top. You know, you get the show and you get the prime spot on the Fox schedule, and then oops, and then you get the movie, and then the movie star is Mel Gibson, and oops. But, you know, shooting the rapids in Hollywood is a lot more profitable, I would think, than, you know, construction or tech support. So there's that, too, in the cup half full mode, right?
And it's, you know, the worst day at this job, you realize, I love these problems. Like this, you know, this is what I want to be buried under. And I have no complaints even about the worst days I have.
Thank you so much.
Happy to do it. Thank you so much for having me.
Too much fun at high.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Matt Holzman is the executive producer. The theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Groman. To leave a comment about today's show, email us at thebusiness@kcrw.org or go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.